right after the international news.
Stand up! Stand up! Stand up! Stand up!
Friends, we can all listen to the Sunny Side of Sports.
Great show, bro. This is Sunny Side of Sports.
Right here on the Voice of America.
Voice of America!
Sporty greetings to all our Voice of America listeners. This is VOA's Sonny Young in Washington. Welcome to the June 15th edition of the Sunny Side of Sports. With the Tokyo Olympics now just over a month away, this evening we remember an American sprinter who won two Olympic gold medals more than 50 years ago. Lee Evans died May 19th in Lagos, Nigeria's commercial capital, after suffering a stroke. He was 74 years old. At the 1968 Mexico City Games, Lee Evans won the gold in the men's 400 meters, setting a then world record of 43.86 seconds. And Lee Evans won a second gold as the anchorman on Team USA's 4x400 meters relay team, helping set another then world record of 2 minutes and 56.16 seconds. After hanging up his track spikes, Lee Evans would go on to coach athletics in several African countries, including Nigeria. To find out more about his life and legacy, Iron Mike Mbonye spoke with a friend of Lee Evans, the Lagos-based athletics coach, Chief Tony Osheku.
I was so sad when I heard about the death of Lee Evans. I got to know about his coma, that he had a coma and he was hospitalized. I started praying. I prayed, you know, every day, you know, for him. But, well, as it will be, you know, he passed on, he gave up, you know, the ghost.
For how long did you know Lee Evans?
I met Nolly Evans as far back as 1980, when I was in secondary school. He was big here in Lagos. He was our national coach, Nigerian national coach. And I was so privileged, you know, to meet him. Then he was coaching our athletes, Sunday Oti, the first Nigerian to break 45 in 400 meters. Henry Amike was training under him then. Henry Amike is our national recorder, Nigerian national recorder, Olympic finalist in 400 hurdles. Daniel Ogidi was also under his tutelage then. So I was under their program also. They used to train us. And we used to have, you know, like a time trial, some meets. He used to run with us. During that time, he told us a lot of story about 1968. Then I got a track scholarship and moved, you know, to U.S. And when I finished my master's degree at the University of New Mexico, I decided, you know, to become a coach. And the first person I turned to was Lee Evans. I called him. I told him I want to start my coaching. And he taught me a lot. He gave me a lot of tips. Very wonderful man. He was not afraid, you know, to share information, you know, with people. And I learned a lot from him. How to prepare athletes, especially how athletes know we focus if you want to be successful.
Can you reflect on Lee's performance at the 1968 Mexico City Olympic Games?
Told me a lot of stories about 1968, how he won that Olympic gold. He said he used to run on lane 7 or lane 8, and when he got to the Olympics, they gave him a better lane than that. And he said, well, he just focused on running 405, despite the fact they were going to run 400 meters. And he told me that the guy that won silver medal, Larry Holmes, Ron Freeman, he said those were his target. And he said when he got to the last 50 meters, he thought, hey, I have like 55 meters to go. He told me that story. Well, he was on the first man to break 44 seconds in 400 meters. He won that Olympic gold 1968 with 43.86. And he told me a story about Africa. He said Africans, they are very talented. He said when, he said at the Olympics 1968, when American won the 4x4, they ran 256. He said Kenya got silver, they ran 259. And he said the person, the guy, you know, that ran, you know, the last leg, he said David Rudisha's father ran the last leg, you know, for Kenya, and they won silver medal. And he said from there, he started thinking about Africa.
Can you tell Sunnyside of Sports listeners about Lee's legacy as an athletics coach in Nigeria?
Then he moved to Nigeria. He said Nigeria didn't know that they were good in 400 meters, not until a coach, Kende Vaughn, who won 400 meters at the African Championship, I believe. He said he told me he taught Nigeria how to run 400, and he made them to believe that they can run 400 meters. I remember him telling me that. He's a man that I really appreciate, very wonderful. He just believed that he was in Nigeria. He told me, he said, his roots should be in Nigeria. And he kept talking about Nigeria. And if you give him a job, he told me one time, he said, if other country give him a job of $5,000 and Nigeria gives him a job of $3,000, he will pick Nigeria over other countries. And I'm glad he taught us a lot. We Nigerians, you know, we gain a lot from him. He's a man that he was so honest, very kind, very humble, not afraid, you know, to share information, you know, with people. And he left Nigeria, you know, for a while. He moved back to Nigeria. And myself, you know, I was in Libya. At one point, I was Libya national coach from 2010, you know, to 2012. And when I moved back, you know, to Lagos, I met him here in Lagos. He was working in Lagos State. And I was so privileged again. I became his assistant. We worked, you know, together. So the same Lee Evans, he taught us how to train, how to do drills, how to be disciplined. I don't know, but I'm going to miss him, you know. I don't know, sometimes I'm like, ha, this life. But he's the type of person somebody is not supposed to be with. Very great man whose achievements deserve not to be recognized and applauded by future generation. So all this stuff, you know, I learned from him. I've been using it, you know, to teach the new athletes. He's a man that we're going to miss a lot, especially in Nigeria. He loved Nigeria, and he died here in Nigeria. May his soul rest in perfect peace.
That's Chief Tony Osheku, a Nigerian athletics coach. And he spoke with Iron Mike Mbonye on the telephone from Lagos, Nigeria.
Squatty greetings, everyone. This is Ambassador Mary Onyale, Olympic medalist, 5-time African champion in the sprint event. You are listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on The Voice of America.
Canadian sprinter Andre DeGrasse is hoping to get back on the Olympic medals podium at the Tokyo Games. The 26-year-old DeGrasse won 3 medals at the 2016 Rio Olympics in Brazil. VOA's Gwen Ooten joins us now with an Olympic profile of the Canadian athlete. Sporty greetings, Gwen.
Sporty greetings, Sonny. This year's Olympic Games will mark the first time in 17 years that a sprinter other than world record holder Usain Bolt will be crowned an Olympic champion in the men's 100 or 200 meter race. And Canadian Andre DeGrasse tells Reuters News he plans to take full advantage of the opportunity to bring home the gold.
I think so far it's going good. Things are going well for me. I've been, you know, the main thing for me is just staying injury free. If I can stay injury free and get to the starting line, I know I can accomplish some big things because I know my training is going well.
DeGrasse has struggled with injuries since he burst on the scene at the 2016 Rio Games, where he became the first Canadian athlete to win a medal in all 3 sprint events, both the 100 and 200 meters and the 4x100 relay. Then a hamstring injury forced DeGrasse to miss the better part of the following 2 seasons. Throughout his long recovery, he had to overcome doubters who questioned whether or not he would ever sprint again with the same speed. But in 2019, DeGrasse silenced the naysayers when he won silver in the 200 meters and bronze in the 100 meters at the World Championships in Doha. Last month, he ran a season-best performance in the 200 meters in the Doha Diamond League, and DeGrasse believes now could be his best shot at winning Olympic gold.
The last Olympics, I felt like I had a good shot at winning gold. You know, this Olympics, I feel like I have a shot. I'll probably say the same thing again for the next Olympics. that's just my mindset, how I feel. Like, I'm just a confident guy. And I always feel like I can do better. I feel like I haven't reached my peak yet.
Like many other athletes, DeGrasse was training to reach his peak last year before the Olympics were postponed due to the coronavirus pandemic. DeGrasse says initially he was upset about the 1-year delay, but he ultimately came to enjoy the break from training.
At the time, I was kind of like bummed out a little bit. I was like, oh, man, like, you know, I was preparing for this moment. But then I was like, okay, it's not that serious. Like, it's not that deep. There's a lot more, you know, important things going on in the world right now. You know, things are, you know, we're in a pandemic, so it's okay. It's okay. I wasn't, when I came to reality and came to my senses again, I'm like, you know, this is more important, you know, okay, well, now I got to worry about taking care of my family, taking care of the people around me, making sure that, you know, everyone's safe, everyone's healthy.
Tokyo is currently under a state of emergency that could end on June 20th. However, the Japanese government is considering placing Tokyo under a quasi-state of emergency during the Olympic Games amid concerns over a potential spike in COVID-19 infections. DeGrasse says he's aware of the health risks in Tokyo, but he's focused on the one thing he can control, a spot on the podium.
That's a little bit scary. You know, hearing what's going on in the news, about what's going on in Tokyo. But I try not to think about it. I try to just keep an open mind and, you know, just focus on what I can control. And just hope that the situation, yeah, I hope the situation can get better by the time that we're ready to get over there.
DeGrasse says he's ready to represent his country once again on the Olympic stage, but knows he'll be running against other competitors who could present the same challenge as the great Usain Bolt.
I know that there's going to be a lot of people to race up against. Like, there's, yeah, I mean, anybody who lines up on that line, eight of us can win that race, but I just have to focus on myself. Focus on executing my race, and let my feet do the talking.
And his feet will do the talking in less than 40 days as we get closer to the start of the Olympic Games, scheduled to kick off on July 23rd in Tokyo. And that is all from me, Sonny. Back over to you.
Thanks, Gwen. That's my VOA colleague, Gwen Uten.
Hi, this is Andre DeGrasse, three-time Olympic sprint medalist, and you're listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on the Voice of America.
In results Monday at the European Football Championship, the Czech Republic defeated Scotland 2-0, Slovakia beat Poland 2-1, and Spain and Sweden played to a scoreless draw. In Glasgow, Scotland, Bayer Leverkusen striker Patrick Schick scored both goals for the Czechs, but it was his second goal that is definitely worth a Sunny Side of Sports salute. Scotland lost possession when a shot toward the Czech goal was blocked and the ball fell to Schick. He looked up and saw opposing goalkeeper David Marshall way off his line. Schick hit a long curling shot that bounced in. At the Copa America tournament in Brazil, Argentina and Chile drew 1-1. Argentina star Lionel Messi scored a stunning free kick in Rio de Janeiro, but Eduardo Vargas equalized for Chile in the second half, heading in a rebound. In another Copa America result, Paraguay defeated Bolivia 3-1. Angel Romero had two goals for Paraguay. Ghana's international footballer Thomas Partey recently completed his first season in the English Premier League. Thomas made 24 appearances for the Gunners of Arsenal, who finished eighth on the EPL table, 25 points behind first place Manchester City. Yawafusu Larbi caught up with Thomas Partey in Accra after Ghana's recent friendly matches against Morocco and Ivory Coast. Here's Yao.
Thomas, you're welcome.
Thank you.
How are you feeling?
I'm good.
Let's talk about your time at in the last season with Arsenal. How was it?
Well, I think everybody have seen it. It's been ups and downs. We've had good time and bad time, but, you know, this is my first season, and I think I had to, you know, adapt to how they play, get used to my mates, and, well, I think now I'm getting used to them. And I know with hard work, everything will be okay for the next season.
Was it challenging?
Of course, it's not easy, you know. That's one of the best leagues in the world. And if you want to be there, you have to be able to do everything good. Yeah. So I like this challenge, and I'm ready to do everything.
Let's comparatively, the Spanish La Liga and then the Premier League, how is it? Is there a difference? Is there a big difference?
Well, both are one of the, you know, best leagues. You cannot say the difference. The only difference is the team where you are playing. They play with different tactics and, well, different coaches, different players. So that's the only difference.
Right. Let's also still stay with Arsenal. But in one of the games, I think it was Arsenal Spurs, you got injured and then you came out and then Arteta asked you to go back on. What was that incident about?
Well, I think people misunderstood that situation,
yeah.
You know. I remember when I first took the ball from one of the Spurs players and then I fell, my court.
Yeah.
And then I was walking straight to, you know, to the bench and then I didn't know what happened. So I saw them, you know, attacking us. So Arteta did not push me. I tried to run back to, you know, try and save that situation, but well, I could not because it was very painful.
Yeah.
And then the media took it personal, and then that's how everything went viral.
Yeah. Are you feeling better now, though? I mean, through the course of last season, you had one injury after the other. Are you feeling better now? Are you feeling like yourself again?
Yes. When you see the last few games, I was able to, you know, play more than 70, some matches, 90 minutes. So I think I'm feeling good. You know, I had to rest for the next season. But, you know, when you have a national duty, you cannot say no. You can try all your best, but then it's your country. You have to, you know, come back and do whatever you have to do and then be professional.
Have you spoken to any of the new boys who have joined the team? And what have you been telling them, given that you are one of the, you know, older players in the team?
Well, I think most of them are professionals, you know. Sometimes you don't need to talk a lot. They have to look up to what the big men in the team are doing. And then they get used to it. They understand to be able to, you know, get to where you have to be. You have to learn from those who were there before. So I think they understood. They understood everything that the coach have told them. And then they are keeping up to us.
Right. So these are preparatory games for when Ghana starts the World Cup qualifiers. It's just next year. Is this something you dream of?
Well, it's a dream of every Ghanaian, every football player to play in the World Cup. So I think it's a big opportunity for us to, you know, show the world that we are among the big players. We cannot be big players without playing in all these tournaments. So we have to do our best and qualify.
Next year also, the African Cup of Nations is coming back. And you know how much pressure that comes with African Cup of Nations and the Black Stars. Have you started feeling the pressure yet?
Well, I think, you know, for Ghanaians, it's a very good opportunity and important tournament for us as a player and for the whole Ghana. And, you know, to be under pressure is normal because this is what we do and we have to get used to it.
Yeah.
We don't need to think about it. We have to prepare from the beginning, from now. And then if we go there with a good mentality and with a good faith, we will be able to achieve greater things.
Also, yesterday, we saw that the whole team went out to, you know, you were in the city, you planted trees and stuff like that, which is good enough for team bonding and all of that. What would you make of the unity that's in the Black Stars?
Well, I think between ourselves, we know what's going on inside. Sometimes bad news will go out and then we don't know how those things come out. We have to trust each other. We have to, you know, keep things to ourselves inside. We have to work harder. No matter what the situation or whatever people are thinking about us, we have to believe in ourselves.
Yeah.
We are the one who are inside. And then, you know, we know how much we love each other and how much we want to help each other. So we have to continue doing that.
Well, most certainly. I mean, it's important that, you know, the team comes together and stuff like that. But also, let me just go back to that, the AFCON issue. I mean, if Ghana wins it, it will be huge for us. But what would it mean for you if you're able to be an integral member of the team that wins AFCON for Ghana?
It will be a great achievement. I'll be the happiest man on earth. Because it's one of the most important trophies in my career as a Ghanaian and as a footballer. And for me, it's more important than winning other trophies. So we are working harder. We are doing our preparations. And I think we have to start with that mentality of winning from now. As I said, we have to be professional. We don't need to choose game. No matter what the team is, what level they are, we have to play as we know. We have to give all. And then all the young guys who are coming in helping us, we'll push them. And then we'll be a great team if everything goes well.
That's Ghana and Arsenal midfielder Thomas Partey. And Thomas was talking with Yawafusu Larbi in Accra, Ghana.
My name is Shaku Samed, junior brother of Basi Samed Sasamer, a light heavyweight at the Ghana national team and an Olympic qualifier. You are listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on the Voice of America.
Hi, this is Larry London, the host of VOA's Border Crossings, where we feature music and interviews along with your favorite artists from around the world. Tune in and interact live with us here in Washington, D.C.
Hello, Shirin.
Hello, Larry. How are you?
Good. How are you tonight?
Border Crossings comes to you Monday through Friday at 1500 UTC GMT.
Thanks, Larry. That's Larry London, a man who's always ready to cross musical borders. I'm Sonny Young, and you're listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on the Voice of America. In National Basketball Association playoff action Monday night, the Atlanta Hawks and the Los Angeles Clippers both posted victories at home to even their second round series at two games each. The Hawks edged the Philadelphia 76ers by 3 points, as we hear now from the AP's Dave Ferry.
The Hawks even their Eastern Conference semifinal series at two games apiece with a comeback win over the 76ers, 103-100. Trae Young overcame a cold shooting start to score 25 points, including a floater that gave Atlanta the lead with 1:17 left. The Sixers led 60-42 late in the first half before Atlanta rallied. Bogdan Bogdanovich scored 22 points, and John Collins had 14 points and 12 rebounds. Young made only 8 of 26 shots, but had 18 assists.
I feel like I had a lot of good looks, and the shots just weren't going in, and I got to be better at knocking down my shots.
Tobias Harris led the 76ers with 20 points, while Joel Embiid added 17 with 21 rebounds.
It was a tough loss, having a big lead. That was a blown opportunity, but it happened. Can't change it. Got to move on into, you know, game 5.
I'm Dave Ferry.
Thanks, Dave. Now let's go to Los Angeles, California, where the Los Angeles Clippers defeated the Utah Jazz 118-104 to even that playoff series at two games each. The AP's Mark Myers reports.
The Clippers were able to square up their playoff series with the Jazz by taking game 4. Kawhi Leonard and Paul George each scored 31 points. PG says Kawhi has taken his game to a new level.
It's playoff basketball, and you know, ultimately it's winning time. And so you see it all around him, his approach, his body language. Everything is to, you know, be great.
Marcus Morris Sr. added 24 points. Utah got 37 from Donovan Mitchell.
I think we found a few things that'll give us an advantage and get us to where we go. And we started being aggressive, started shooting as a whole. And, you know, that's why we cut it to, I think, 10 or 12 or whatever. So if we can just continue that in this way we played in the second half and the first, you know, and come out in game 5 and be ready, I think we'll be in good shape. But we also got a guard, too.
Now it's a best of 3 going back to Salt Lake for game 5. I am Mark Myers.
Thanks, Mark. The NBA playoffs resume later Tuesday night when the Brooklyn Nets host the Milwaukee Bucks in New York. This best of 7 game playoff series is tied at 2 games each, but you might say the Bucks are way ahead in the health category. The Nets have featured 3 big stars in their lineup this season: Kevin Durant, James Harden, and Kyrie Irving. But right now, Durant seems to be their only healthy star. Brooklyn's head coach, Steve Nash, says Irving won't play Tuesday night because of a sprained right ankle he suffered Sunday in Game 4. And Harden hasn't played since the opening minute of Game 1 because of a right hamstring injury.
You're listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on the Voice of America.
The Malian president of basketball's world governing body, Hamane Niang, has stepped aside from his position, at least temporarily, amid allegations he knew about sexual abuse while overseeing Mali's women's basketball growth and did nothing. In a statement, the International Basketball Federation, FIBA, quotes the 69-year-old Niang, saying he strongly denies the allegations. The New York Times newspaper published allegations implicating around 12 coaches and officials in sexual abuse that involved about 100 female players. Niang was not accused of abusing women. The allegations are from 1999 to 2011, a period in which Niang was president of Mali's Basketball Federation. FIBA says it will conduct an investigation into the charges. The probe will be done by FIBA's integrity officer, Richard McLaren.
I'm Kendra Harrison. I'm the 100 hurdle world record holder for Team USA, and you're listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on the Voice of America.
VOA brings you the best in African music on the African beat. African Beat showcases the latest and the greatest of contemporary African music, from bobo music to hip life, bongo flavor to soukous, Afrobeat to ndombolo and makossa to kwaito. The African Beat on VOA has it all. And it's happening right here, Mondays through Fridays at 09:05 and 20:05 UTC, right after the international news.
Thanks, David. That's David Vandy, the host of the VOA's African Beat music show. I'm Sonny Young, and you're listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on the Voice of America. Douglas Mpuga joins us now with more African sports news. And Douglas says he'll be kicking off with African club football.
The semifinal fixtures for the CAF Confederation Cup are out. Through to the semifinals are 2018 winners Raja of Morocco, last season's runners-up Pyramid of Egypt, JS Kabylie of Algeria, and Coron Sport of Cameroon. The first leg of the semifinal will be on Sunday, June 20th, 2021, when Coron Sport will take on Kabylie in Yaoundé and Pyramids will host Raja in Casablanca. The second leg is a week later on June 27th. Also in the Champions League, the semi-final fixtures are set for Saturday, June 19th for the first leg and a week later for the second leg. Competing for the finals are holders and record 9-time champions Al Ahly of Egypt, 4-time winners Esperance of Tunisia, twice champions Wydad of Morocco, and first-time semi-finalist Kaizer Chiefs of South Africa. In the first leg, Esperance host Al Ahly, while Wydad host Kaizer Chiefs in Casablanca. In athletics, Ethiopia's Letesenebet Gide broke the women's 10,000 meters world record by more than 5 seconds just 2 days after it had previously been smashed. Gide ran 29 minutes, 1.03 seconds at the Ethiopian trials in the Netherlands. Dutch runner Sifan Hassan had broken the previous record set by Ethiopia's Almaz Ayana at the 2016 Olympics by more than 10 seconds. Gide also holds the women's 5,000 meters world record and is now the first woman to hold both world records since Ingrid Christensen did so from 1986 to 1993. In Olympics news, athletes will be subject to GPS monitoring, according to Tokyo 2020 Organizing Committee Chief Toshiro Muto. The system will not be used to track real-time movement, but trace them retroactively if issues arise around COVID-19. International members of the media will also be subject to monitoring. Muto reportedly said it had not yet been decided if alcohol will be allowed in the athletes' village. Tokyo remains under a state of emergency due to a surge in COVID-19 cases. The Olympics are set to run from July 23rd to August 8th, with the Paralympics following from August 24th to September 5th.
Thanks, Douglas. That's Douglas Mpuga. And that wraps up the June 15th edition of the show. Thank you for tuning in. I'm VOA's Sonny Young in Washington, and that's the Sunny Side of Sports.